there are many federal agencies created in these nation states that they call the United States, each supposedly with their own rules, regulations, and their goals. But most of those goals remain insidious in how to reap the harvest of the cultural resources of the indigenous peoples. That has now reached far into the world. And as an example, the pharmaceutical groups continue to try and utilize and patent the gene pools of indigenous people throughout the world. All this is done for economic reasons, for the money. The health of the human beings, as is known by the mainstream, the welfare, the economy, everything tied that is taught in their books is tied to the funding, to money, and how profit could be made. Just this morning, there's a report, there is a new serum now that they're going to try on human beings to try and arrest the HIV. Now, if they're successful, they are going to become very wealthy from this. And that's an example of what is going on throughout the world, the stealing of blood samples and the attempts through conventions and meetings and whatever gatherings that the federal government and the United Nations would like to put forth to try and usurp the remaining resources of the indigenous peoples so they also can become wealthy if they find a cure utilized in some gene pool of a certain people. It is disturbing to me, of course, as a culturally oriented individual, that the Convention on Biological Diversity has words that you can turn to in almost any page. And it says, encourage the equitable sharing of the benefits arising from the utilization of such knowledge, innovations, and practices. They're talking about our resources. Sharing to them means, give me what you have, let me study it, and I will put it into the scientific journals and fields, and they will make money at it. Many organizations are created by Washington, D.C. to address certain environmental issues, social issues, political issues, and they will provide many of those entities with millions of dollars. And part of that segment will perhaps say, what about the Native Americans? Well, then they must come to the Native American and learn. And they ask you to sit with them and teach them. And they may compensate you for that little time that you have contributed to that. But they, in turn, go back, and with their overhead charges and everything, make a lot of money out of it. That should cease. There are enough intelligent individuals, indigenous to this land, Native Americans, that know science very well, know social politics, and etc. So what I'm leading to, of course, is the title of this presentation. There is a new profession, fairly new. It's called systems engineering. And a systems engineer will look at a project and do a systems analysis, which basically means if you start here, you've got to go around and come back and meet this by seeing that everything is covered, whether it be environmental, legal, social, etc. And this is what had not happened when they created this industrial revolution, nuclear industrial revolution. We have found evidence, I have seen evidence, for instance, of human radiation experiments on the Yakima. There's classified documents, but we have friends around this world that will sneak these out and provide them. And it showed in 1941, prior to the Hanford Reservation ever becoming a reality, that phosphorus 32 was introduced into the Yakima and the Columbia River. Phosphorus 32 has a half-life of 4.5 days. They needed to find out how they could kill mass amounts of people, because the United States was afraid that the Germans would develop the bomb before we would. The only thing they could imagine to kill mass amounts of people was radiological warfare. But to use strontium, which is a very deadly thing, and or plutonium or uranium or cesium, all those have long half-lives. And would be too much evidence to leave. So they found this phosphorus, 32, and we found that it goes directly to the eyes of the salmon and to the soft bone inside the salmon head, which is revered by the indigenous people. We think it's one of some of the greatest food. In fact, the elders have for years taught the children, you best not eat that because you will get old fast. And so therefore the children don't eat it. That's more for us. But they knew then, after asking the indigenous people, how can we protect you? What do you eat? Show us your foods. We will protect you. Instead, they utilized that on human radiation experiments. A few years later, in 1954, they did whole body counts. And INNEL was, or the PNNL was the scientific laboratory that was used in a big truck. And they claimed, according to the same classified document, that they did whole body counts in excess of 5,000 people in the Ringgold community. There is no community in Ringgold. The only people used to associate that little area was the indigenous people, because it was a great fishing place. Many people used to congregate there, but only the Yakimas and one of them could fish there because it was in our ceded area. But we get many visitors from around the whole area to come there and trade. And so, afraid to open Pandora's box, such as happened to the tobacco industry, there is this consistent denial, as Rosalie has mentioned, the denial by federal agencies, science, that no, there is no proven effects from radioactivities. But it was worked at systematically prior to the division which created the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the Department of Energy. Under the Atomic Energy Commission, there was this mass public deception that for years they said, don't worry, everything's fine. And you didn't worry. But in 1986, they were forced to release 96,000 documents, declassified, of course, in which it showed tremendous amounts of radio nuclides that went into the air and into the environment. One document said in 1945, 340,000 curies of iodine-131 went into the air. Now keep in mind, in comparison, it was less than 24 curies that shut down Three Mile Island. And in 1946, 76,000 curies were released. In 1949, close to 8,000 curies were released as an experiment on the whole region. They call it the Green Run. And yet, because of the latency period, which could take anywhere from 15 to 20 years before any effects would ever show up, they claimed that there was no effects. Well, you don't know yet. I do not know whether or not my genes today are damaged, whether or not my mother and her daughters will pass these damaged genes on down to the other generations. We do not know whether or not in another generation or two mutations may show up, or immune deficiencies, which would put us back into the same position we were in 500 years ago or 200 years ago when the people first came around here, the newcomers. And so we're faced with quite a dilemma. Because of the latency period, you must do a thorough scientific research to prove causality, which takes time, knowledge, and of course money. We were denied all three for years. Recently, though, we have been notified by scientists from around the world that they are willing to help. But we just need to find the funding. But as Rosalie mentioned, we need to also convince your own people what has taken place, because the mass public deception that they have grown with has worked. Many of them do not wish to address it. Many of the elected officials are perhaps somewhat intimidated by the subject matter. And so we have come to the point where there is much information pointing to what has caused the highest rate of rheumatoid arthritis in the country is what the Yakima Nation had the dubious honor of having 15 years ago and recently. But now cancers are catching up. Diabetes is surpassing all of these other sicknesses in our tribe and many tribes in the Northwest area. I have been told by knowledgeable doctors in the fields from years back that they think one of the greatest contributors to diabetes is the change of diet. And that could be true, and I think it is. The salmon in this region dropped dramatically from 1946, clear down throughout the 60s and 70s, early 70s. What's led to the George Bolt decision? And keep in mind, this is the same time that there was some of the peaks in the releases of radionuclides out of Hanford. And people on this side of the cascade seem to think that this curtain that they always mention politically, but don't realize that the wind is not always to the east. Right now, the front that is coming down from Canada is pushing much of that materials this way. And it has been doing that for throughout the 50-year process of the in the creation of Hanford from 1943. And the Yakima have the dubious honor of having this facility in our front yard. Hanford is part of the 12-million-acre reservation the Yakima Nation had on Oregon and Washington were one territory. We were forced to make a treaty in 1855, lest we stand in blood knee-deep. And we did not want to lose our younger generations, so we made a treaty and settled for 1.3 million acres where we now reside. But the signatories to the treaty, the indigenous people, held out until it was written that we would forever be able to gather our foods and medicines and to hunt and fish in all usual and accustomed places. The indigenous people from old, based upon our language, our knowledge of the environment, the knowledge of the universe, knew and know about the creation of this universe. The Big Bang Theory, I'm supposing they talked about. Way before anyone ever advised us, they knew that there were 9 planets surrounding the sun. They had all this vast knowledge and knew that the earth spoke 3 times and know that it will speak again when the time comes. 3 times previous was, for instance, possibly the Pleistocene area, the era, rather. And we predict that when there is no longer the ability of the indigenous people to speak our language, practice our culture, this world will no longer be needed. So we teach our children as best as possible. But it comes at great cost. It comes at great cost to the physical, mental, social stability of individuals such as Rudy, George Manuel, perhaps Rosalie. There are a few in this world that continue to try to find justice in the world as a human being. The implementation and the statements of environmental justice by many entities, including federal governments, federal agencies rather, is nice. But what they do not want to address is the environmental injustice, which would point directly to the indigenous peoples and their concerns. And so at the creation of this Hanford Nuclear Reservation, the oldest and the largest and the most polluted and dangerous facility in the Western Hemisphere, they did not do a systems analysis. And although they created the bomb, the second one that was dropped on the Japanese, on Nagasaki, was created at Hanford. The plutonium was created at Hanford. The refined plutonium, 239, is the most deadliest thing on Earth made by man. It has a half-life of 24,000 years. And so there is a danger that much of this material that is at Hanford may remain there for eons. And there is this consistency to deny the indigenous people to participate in the refurbation, the restoration, and the attempt to bring back the environmental integrity to that land that we have known for millennia. The fish being the major food is also supplanted by the 70 different types of food that come out of the ground, and an equal amount of medicines that we had that would cure just about anything. Because of a loss of our culture, we have lost those great doctors that we had in the past. Very powerful people could do things that you would never believe in today's society. But I have witnessed it with my own eyes. Instead, much like many people of the indigenous world, such as Rosalie, I was a five-year-old that was taken by the Bureau of Indian Affairs, forced upon a bus, and taken to another state, to a school, and was beaten if I was caught speaking my own language. And I was very fortunate that my aunt raised me from three months old. And because I caused my mother to be sick when I was born. And the white doctor sent her home and said she has no chance of living for less than a year. So my father gave me to his sister and said his mother can't feed him. I can't raise him. I have to take care of my wife. The point I'm getting at is when I returned back from that boarding school and told my aunt the horror stories, she went to my father and said, "You can send the rest of your children to that school if you wish. This one is not going. If he has to go to school, you'd best find him one close by here where I can watch him. If you don't, I'll take him to the hills and you'll never find us." She could have did it. She was over 50 years old, and we used to live in the mountains most of the time, go up on horseback, by wagon. And I'm dating my age. And so I went to public school there, the first one to ever go to the public school in Toppenish, Washington, which is right in the center of our reservation. But they said, "No, we don't allow Indians in the school." My father, being a World War I veteran, then went to the American Legion and the Veterans of Foreign Wars. And they all marched down there and said, "If you don't let this boy in here, we're going to sue you and shut you down." So they let me in. But I was fortunate in that I was able to converse with my aunt, my mother, and father almost every day in our language. And I retained that ability to speak my language and better understand what has happened in this world now to not only the Yakima, but all indigenous people throughout the world. And we have attempted to contribute to the environmental restoration of Hanford. We have attempted for about 10 years now to convince the Department of Energy, United States government, that we can contribute, utilize the institutional, the technological, and introduce the cultural portion, and to implement the holistic approach to environmental management. That can be understood very easily if one really tries. Number one, though, the model is to turn everything around from the traditional use by the corporate structures and put the environment first and the product last. From an economic standpoint of those corporate structures, that's unacceptable. But how else are you going to ever return any environmental integrity to certain regions for the benefit of future generations if you do not implement such a process? Cultures have withstood the test of time. And what better knowledge to use in this trilogy to try and implement a notion that this land can be refurbished? It is our duty to do so under the laws of the Creator. We are instructed to preserve and protect the land and resources of this land for those children yet unborn. And that's further than 7 generations. There are many children coming in the future. When I was the child of the future from many generations back, that was their instructions. That was their duty. That was passed down from generation to generation in our language, much like our songs that we sing in our religion. The religions of the world that tried to create Christianity among us, whether it be Catholic, Presbyterian, whatever. Incidentally, when I got to that school, 5 years old, I couldn't understand what they were trying to tell me. And they said, well, we don't know which church we should put him in because he's a longhouse person. We don't have longhouses here. And they pull out a sheet of paper and said, let's see, we're short of Lutherans this year. We'll make him a Lutheran. So for 9 months of my life, I was a Lutheran. I go to church every Sunday with a white shirt on and sing the opening song of Holy, Holy, Holy. But it was enlightening in a manner that now I reflect back on that, and it was necessary for me to learn things of that nature. No different than I go and learn about some other religion. And in no way do I disrespect, as I've been taught, any other religion. But I do not wish to lose mine. But it's perhaps imminent if we don't do something. In the Clinton administration, 4 years back, they introduced the concept of risk assessment. And they said we may be able to use risk assessment to even determine where our money goes to every agency and department in this country. And they have created many risk assessment models of the past, MASO LT2, MEPAS, multi-attribute utility analysis. But none of those models would allow cultures to fit through them. And so now they attempt to insinuate that they can do such a thing, but they really cannot without the knowledge of the indigenous person, much like the trilogy I mentioned a while ago. They do not know how to weight culture. They do not know how to address culture other than what is written in Webster's dictionary. We have to adapt to that word culture because that's the only way we can communicate from my language to yours. But we define culture in a different manner. And the food we eat is part of our genes, and we have been doing so for thousands of years, but because of many issues, nuclear one of them, we are denied these foods. socially, we are denied these foods because of the bovine that has taken over our reservation in the terms of economic benefits. But those bovines destroy much of our natural foods and medicines and environment every year. And so they continue on to attempt to address such of these things, but socially we are adapting more to the pizzas and McDonald's and things of that nature. And perhaps that is why we are getting a high rate of diabetes. Our genes are not used to that food. And they scream for the indigenous food that they have known, that your ancestors have passed down to you. So now we have put in writing, and I will read some excerpts from what we have tried to present to the Yakima members in February of 2000. We have done many more of these in the past, and we're going to be continuing to do this to eventually penetrate what is a shield somewhat of, or the intimidation of nuclear into the to the minds of the Yakima people and others around the world. The Yakima Nation is uniquely situated in their customs, lifestyles, dietary patterns, religious expressions, and cultural habits to suffer radiological and toxic exposure significantly more severe than that suffered by non-Native Americans from the operation of Hanford facilities. As I mentioned, they turned loose many thousands and millions of curies of materials into the Columbia River, into the environment, into the air, and they still have 177 underground tanks. 28 of these tanks are double-shelled and more recently built, to which they bring as much material, liquid material, out of the single-shell tanks into the double-shell tanks as possible. The reason is the single-shell tanks are deteriorating. 38 of these 149 single-shell tanks are known to be leakers, and it's just a matter of time before the others start to leak. This material they have, potpourri of material that they have put into these tanks, was a result of no systems engineering, no systems analysis. And it's eaten through these tanks, and it's some of the most deadly material. You can't stand next to it, you die. It's simple as that. And they recently had to admit 3 years ago that it had reached the groundwater in the Hanford site, which is 320 feet deep. And it's now moving to the mighty Columbia River, the lifeline of the Pacific Northwest. And it's only a matter of time before they show more of this material getting into the system. And what I mean by more, there is already a lot in the Columbia River system, because in the beginning of the 40s and the 50s, they used to run their water through the reactors just once and dump them back into the river. And it took a study from the University of Oregon in the mid-1950s to show that the shellfish off the states of Oregon and Washington were contaminated with radionuclides. That forced them to change the methods and to run the water through the reactors and hold it for a certain period of time and then let it back into the system to cool it off thermally and radioactivity. But yet much of the particles were in there, carried much of this material on down, and you can imagine what's behind each dam before it reaches the ocean. I would consider that behind Bonneville Dam the most polluted because that's one of the oldest dams that there is. And the others upstream were built after Hanford became a reality. But the 28 double shell tanks that have 54 million gallons of material. One, 101SY, in 1989 started to burp every 3 months, or every six months. And what they didn't realize, and they have not yet characterized what's all in those tanks and the diffusion process then, and some of the hardened stuff that was in there would push up, build up. And when they get to that push to the top, couldn't go anymore, then it'd spew out the vents. And what went into the air, nobody knows, but it had to be deadly. It's still happening today. There's venting coming out of those tanks. They claim it's condensation. I wouldn't depend upon that. But there is an attempt to now to vitrify this material, mix it with glass, and put it in casks and store it someplace. And yet they do not. They have not yet defined what type of glass to utilize. Ceramics would be some of the best, I would imagine, but it's also the most expensive. And when they first spoke of this 20 years ago, of putting this with glass, they were talking about regular glass, like you see on the windows. And at that time, each canister, 2 feet across and 10 feet high, cost about $350,000. You can imagine what the price is now, especially if they have to go to a more expensive gas. And more sophisticated ways of trying to contain this material wherever they want to ship it. The Yakima Nation was the only, first and only tribe to testify on nuclear June 24th of 1980 before a Senate subcommittee. We went on then to be the only tribe to contribute to the parent legislation that became the Nuclear Waste Policy Act of 1982, Public Law 425. In there, had it not been for our presentation, would not have been. You must consult and cooperate with Indian tribes. This is under 117C of the Act. Before you make any major decisions, there has to be consultation and cooperation with the tribes. That has not worked too well. The imposition of consultation and cooperation is from their viewpoint. And so we must try to turn that around, no different than in these great institutions of learning. There is no teachings of why there is a treaty. There are no teachings from grade school up through high school, what the treaty means and why the indigenous people should be considered unique. And we must turn that around. The education curriculums, not only locally and nationally, but internationally. Because 90% of the resources in this world are still controlled by the indigenous people. So you can imagine why the pharmaceutical groups and many corporate structures want to control that. The control of the nuclear industry today is maintained by the military, science, and the corporate structures. They all help each other. Science helps justify new weaponry. Helps justify the creation of more tritium that has a half-life of 16 years. The tritium is a trigger mechanism for weapons, for missiles. So is plutonium-239 in its refined form, but that's more expensive, more heavier, So if they could use it with the light tritium, it's less expensive, shoot further, etc., kill more people. It's astonishing what man can do to try and kill his fellow man, but yet do very little to truly protect and preserve the unique people throughout this world. There is no technology at this point in time to render nuclear waste neutral. But also at the same time, the corporate structures and military and science being at the trough do not wish to at this time resolve this problem. Why should they when they're making money hand over fist, especially down here at Hanford? When I first got started in it, Rockwell International was running it, maintaining and administering to it. Not long later, Westinghouse came in. Now we've got Floor Daniel back there, the very same start of people, like DuPont are now working down there, that started the Hanford site and start polluting. And they want them to clean it up? No one that is the polluter will ever clean it up, because they would have to then admit what they did. And so with this vast problem that is not only here but in other parts of the world, especially Russia, which has bigger problems than we do in regard to nuclear, keep in mind that South America and South Africa and a few other parts of the world have nuclear reactors designed after the reactor 4 at Chernobyl that blew up. And to give you an example of the effects, a scientist sent an article that he wrote, found it in a science magazine. He returned to Chernobyl 10 years after the accident happened. And he thought he was looking forward to finding devastation. Instead, he found these voles. Voles are like a mouse, but a little bigger than ours. And they were thriving, running all over the place. And he thought, my God, what's going on here? But to make the story short, he found after scientific study that these voles were living 10 years in 1 year. Their genes mechanisms and etc. had been set into a motion where they were aging much faster. And there was a possibility that because of the damage to their enzymes, they would never reproduce after a certain point of time. That's my fear of the indigenous people, dependent upon the natural foods and medicines that are here at Yakima and other parts of the world also. I have perhaps taken more than my allotted time, but I have barely scratched the surface of the many issues around nuclear that is going to affect our future generations. We need to understand the methodisms that the politicians have, how they can better utilize risk assessment. Right now, if they build a model on the indigenous people of this country, the risk assessment would show that the highest risk to the indigenous person would be that you would die in impoverishment, socially, mentally, and physically. That seems to be the aim, the goal. That seems to be the way the systematic operations have been implemented upon the indigenous people, not only here but throughout the world. But we're beginning to catch on. there is little understanding by the top level of this government in this United States about what is going on. Mr. Bush seems to have not the talent. Like, for instance, yesterday they asked him a question, what is the resolve of this issue of espionage, since they caught the spy? And he says, oh yes, he said, we all must be concerned about espionage. That was his answer. And there are so many other issues that they deny and they do not wish to address, or they do not know. But I guess what can you expect from a country whose three top leaders are named after some anatomy, part of your anatomy? And so I will close with that, unless there are some questions that you wish to ask. And it can be about whatever you think you have heard here. Your question will reflect on what you think you have heard or not heard, perhaps. And we will be glad to teach you, because, as we mentioned, the man that started these organizations had a great, great heart and a great mind, and he was put here for a reason by the Creator. And he has passed on to somewhat of these disciples the carrying of this torch, so that we can better understand each other, that we can perhaps introduce into the curriculums at an early stage of our children, so that our children and grandchildren can understand each other better when they grow up. And if there are no questions, I will... yes, sir. The question is, what about the dams? Are there funding being found to perhaps take the dams out to save the salmon or whatever? I don't think there may be any money to do so in the very near future, unless California and other places of the country in the Western Hemisphere start experiencing more blackouts. And with that blackouts, they will then depend more upon the hydrologic cheaper material that's here up from up the Northwest. That is one of the strongest arguments of not taking any dams out. I don't really know the status. I'm not a part of that, but I read and I imagine what would be the answer to the situation. And I think, in my own little imagination, that technology can develop a system around the dams so that the salmon can come out next to and fashion it as much as a creek, as a river, or whatever it can be, so the salmon will come back and still have the dams at a certain period to make sure there's enough electricity. There is new technology being developed now that would make the turbines more efficient. What's now the turbines, as I understand, are only productive for about half the time. So there are so many questions to be answered yet, and you just have to find the right group and entity to address those issues. Yes. I can't speak for all of them. The question is, since appropriations have been created by Congress to help indigenous people of this country preserve and protect their language, what is the progression? Is there any satisfaction? I'm sure there are some places in the country where this is very beneficial. Most of that benefits will come to a place when there's only one or two left in the world that can speak the language. And the then they turn to the methods of trying to write the language. But the Yakimas are faced with a dilemma. We have a school in which elders go over and sit and talk to the students, but the young minds are not developed to a point where they fully understand why they need this language. And Mother Earth needs to understand what you are saying, and you speak to her through the resources, the foods, the medicines. That's why we have feasts every year. We have at least 3 or 4 feasts a year honoring the new foods that come out of the ground. The last feast of the year is for the huckleberry in the Yakima culture. And so if we try to teach our children, it's difficult when you have 14 tribes and bands that make up the Confederation of the Yakima, and you try and teach 14 different dialects. There's not everybody can speak those dialects anymore. There's only 2 I know speak the Wishram language, where Wishram is over there on the Columbia. 2 men left that can speak Wishram. But there are people up here in the middle of northern Canada that speak the same language. But they split many years ago and went down the river trying to find a place and ended up in Canada. But the situation was so bad at that time, and they don't forget up there. If you go from here up there and talk their language, you know that you're part of the enemy and they'll kill you. That's what I've heard. There is a lot of, the question is there a lot of work in anthropology that would assist us? Anthropology is a system all of its own, for benefit of its own. They continue to imply and insist that we came here. You know, the Yakimas came here on the Bering Strait Bridge. The Yakima has been taught from the time of the beginning that the Creator made us here. We didn't migrate in or anything. We believe in creation. We have nothing against teaching of any other issue, like excuse me. But I still haven't touched on all of the issue of how the Yakimas teach either. We find it very difficult, and they attempted to write a book on the Yakima language, but I told them that, number one, the cultural teaching from the elders way back in the beginning was that this language was never meant to be put in black and white on this earth. Where it is written is in the other land. And if you speak true here, and you eventually get to that other land and you see your words written there, you know they were true and you will be happy. At the same time, they do not now know how to address the other 14 dialects. And so I said, you'll end up with a book as big as this university. But it's not an impossibility. We may, when I'm gone, they may be able to sit down and at least keep up a general conversation in our language from the writings and etc. But it goes much deeper than that. There are some people here that believe that they have developed a risk assessment model that will fit tribes because they have added situations in there like the sweat house and etc. But that doesn't come anywhere near knowing the uniqueness of the language and how it can address everything down to the smallest microbe. And this is part of the holistic approach to environmental management. How we don't address this one resource. We tie all that resource together. So it's not been too successful of preserving our language in the Yakima, but I think it will come around to finding some way here. We have quite a few that speak our language. And if some make a concerted effort, I think we can do it. Yes. I don't think so. I have witnessed too much of the legislation that has come down and the attempts by the Department of Energy to continue to undermine our participation. They tell us, oh, yes, we'll provide you money for you to address these issues. And here is what we're going to be doing after they decide. After they decide what they're going to do, they'll send it to us for comment, and they just want us to comment, and that's it. They put those comments on a shelf and forget about it. But they check off and say, we have consulted with the Yakima Nation. We said, that's not good enough. We want to participate on the pre-decisional documents, and we want to participate in everything there is there in order to see that it is truly cleaned up and is safe for our use in the future. That hasn't come about yet. And let's take the 10-year plan that they talked about 4 years ago. And we finally got a hold of that plan and tore it apart and said, we demanded, here are 8 points that you must introduce into this plan. Otherwise, we're not going to accept it. Well, they pushed the 10-year plan aside and introduced a new rule about the 8-year plan, called the 2006 plan. And they knew that we were going to address that also, so they quickly made a quiet deal with Congress to accept the 2006 plan. And then they went into the accelerated plastic closure, which means that when they proposed to clean up all the little sites in the country, like Rocky Flats in Colorado and Pantex in Texas and Vernal in Idaho, West Valley in New York, they clean up all those little sites, there's going to be residue left over. There's going to be low-level waste, low-level mixed waste. There's going to be strontium, plutonium, cesium, uranium, all the bad, thorium, all the bad stuff there. And where is that stuff going to go? It's going to go to Hanford. And they can't even take care of the legacy waste there. So how can they justify bringing more is what we're telling them. So they're not working with us. Instead, they're keeping us at bay. And they use the appropriations process to do that. If they don't like what we're doing, they cut our funds and we're dead in the water, which they have done within the last few months. And we've barely started our program here on the 31st of January again. We were assured to have some funds to work with, but it's nowhere near the funds we need to truly address the issues. And thank you for your question. I'm overrunning my time. Thank you.
Thank you.